Blog Talk Radio.
Here's an important message from Reverend Dr. Jeremiah A. Wright, Jr., Senior Pastor of Trinity United Church of Christ.
Did you know that more than half of all the new HIV/AIDS cases reported are among African Americans? Our men, our women, and our children are at risk. We must put aside our fears, exercise our faith, and put an end to this deadly disease. Encourage testing. Learn more about HIV and AIDS.
For testing locations, contact the CDC National STD and AIDS Hotline at 1-800-342-AIDS.
Good morning, and welcome to, I guess, the second edition of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. Don't forget to mark the show as a favorite on Blog Talk Radio. And also, you can follow me on Twitter, www.twitter.com/Joy Keyes. Or you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. This second edition, I'm going to be bringing in two wonderful experts in the field of women and gambling addiction. I think they're on the line now.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning. This is Noelle with Cat Tomei calling from Canada.
Hi. And good morning. Thank you for joining us.
And Lori Rugel calling from Connecticut.
Good morning, Lori.
Good morning.
Okay, let me just tell the audience a little bit about you guys. You're doing some wonderful work here. First, Dr. Rugel is a director of Problem Gambling Services with the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services for the state of Connecticut. PGS has established the Connecticut Women's Problem Gambling Project, which brings together stakeholders from diverse community groups to address the issue of women and problem gambling. She was previously the director of the Gambling Treatment Program at the Cleveland Department of Veterans Affairs Medical Center and deputy director of their Veterans Addiction Recovery Center. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also, we have a wonderful caller all the way from Alberta, Canada, Noelle Piquette Tomei. She is currently associate professor at the University of Lethbridge. She is also a registered psychologist. She's working on actually an international workshop entitled Behind the Mask, a symposium on women problem gamblers, and that's going to be held just next month, April 2010. I found her through an article she did about women and gambling and a group therapy. So we're going to delve into her article a little bit. Good morning, ladies. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what do you think is, what causes a woman to start gambling? I'll start with Dr. Piquette Tomei. What draws her into this type of addiction?
Well, I mean, to start off with sort of a basic is that it's a socially sanctioned activity and very, very prevalent. And I'll just focus on North American societies, although this certainly can be extrapolated to all westernized societies that we talk about betting all of the time. We certainly have a dearth of different activities leading from, you know, church type of bingo games. We have all the lottery tickets. We have casinos, of course, and within bars, video lottery terminals or VLTs. We bet on hockey games. We bet on who has the
fantasy football.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's very socially sanctioned. So, I mean, it's part of our culture. And for a lot of females, what draws them into gambling, and certainly research and some of the therapy groups that have gone on have indicated the same thing, that women tend to start gambling, first of all, later than men. So closer to their 40s, although there's always exceptions of that, and there's sort of a mediating factor is that for the first time they have a little bit more time and disposable income to themselves, and so they begin socializing with other females in something that seems very non-threatening, so bingo games or lotteries, going to, I won't say Vegas because everyone picks on Vegas too much.
To go what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Stays in Vegas.
Dr. Rugel, mostly
the losses. Mostly the losses that occur in Vegas stay in Vegas.
Their
wins. Yeah.
Let me just bring Lori, Dr. Rugel, into the conversation.
Sure.
The types of gambling that women do are different from my readings and research, are different than what men do. Tell us a little bit about that.
I think women tend to go to the non-skill games, slot machines, keno, lotteries, where you haven't had to be acculturated into the culture of gambling. You don't have to know how to play poker. You don't have to know how to play blackjack. You don't know how to handicap horses and sports teams and things like that, mm-hmm. and games where you're not playing with another person, so nobody's going to criticize that you're doing something wrong. So it's a very safe way of gambling in fairly solitary, even if you're in a social context like a casino. You feel safe, and I think that's one of the things that's important about many gambling venues for women is they're safe. Several of the women I treat, when they wake up at 2 or 3 in the morning and they're thinking about personal losses or they're depressed, they don't want to go out to a bar at that time, but the casino feels very safe. There's security, it's well lit, nobody's going to hit on them, you know, mm-hmm, things like mm-hmm. that. So it's a very safe place for women to feel not alone and to escape from their worries, from their losses, from their grief, from their caretaker roles. This is a place where people take care of them and ask them what they want, not where they're having to serve people or take care of aging parents or younger children.
Mm-hmm. Let me read a little bit. This is from the Council on Compulsive Gambling in New Jersey, and they talk about, I guess, characteristics of female gamblers. They're closet gamblers, and they don't really brag about when they win. Most women stay with legal gambling. 75% of female gamblers describe their gambling as both of you mentioned, escape from different issues, stress, marital problems, financial problems. Most female compulsive gamblers have a family history of addiction. Now, Dr. Piquette-Tomei, do you find that in your study that the women have some kind of historical connection with the gambling addiction?
Not with gambling addiction, but certainly with some other mental health issues, as well as some issues around anxiety. I've always found the link with gambling addiction, and really you could look at any type of addiction, in looking at that trajectory from parent to child and continuing on the generations. It makes sense that if you see a particular behavior within a family home, mm-hmm. that you're much more likely to engage in that activity. I mean, not only because it's acceptable, but because there's a safety in knowing that you are doing something that other people that you know and love have also done, whether there's any value judgment around it or not.
Right. Now, go ahead, sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. I just want to absolutely concur with Lori's statements about certainly the types of activities that women engage in, and the types of activities that women engage in then translates directly to any kind of therapeutic intervention. And I don't know if you want to go into this already, but I just wanted to make a comment that typically when women start seeking assistance, and of course there's a very low amount of both men and women who are problem gamblers who seek assistance, and then once they seek assistance actually remain in it. But for those who have sought assistance, certainly the one underlying factor that all of them have indicated is that it's very problematic for them to find an intervention that feels safe and comfortable to them. Particularly,
well, I think that's what your article is about, this mm-hmm. group, and that there were all women there. Dr. Ruegel, do you find that women are more comfortable talking to other women in your experience, or do they like the mixed gender groups? And even in terms of one-on-one help, say if a person goes to a therapist, do you find they like a female therapist versus a male therapist?
I think, yeah, they find it more comfortable to relate to other women, and especially with self-help groups like Gamblers Anonymous. Historically, they've been very male-oriented, and it's been very difficult for women to integrate themselves into those self-help groups. It's better now as more and more women, unfortunately, are developing the addiction, so there are more women in self-help groups. But I think having gender-specific groups is really important, where women feel safe talking about issues of abuse, sexual, physical, emotional abuse, talking about relationship issues that they often don't feel comfortable with in mixed gender groups.
Well, Dr. Piquette-Tomei, that's a journal article, was in the Journal of Gambling Issues 22 in December 2008, and you've worked with the group therapy for women problem gamblers. Tell us a little bit about that project that you worked on.
Certainly, and actually the next study is about to be published, so I can talk about that as well. Sort of an over-encompassing thing. The research question that was posed to the women who were involved in an all-women's counseling group was, basically what makes a counseling group effective. And so that didn't necessarily have to remain only in this particular group, because all of them had been in various counseling therapeutic groups. So some of the results that came out, which were not entirely surprising, but it's always wonderful to see it in print and have it validated, is that the women found that there were particular components of the group therapy that really supported them. So the first one was that it was really accessible and that there was nourishment. And if anyone reads that, it sounds funny that they all commented on the cookies and coffees and whatnot. but it makes so much sense. I mean, every culture has some type of activity around food as a way of bonding and talking and relaxing, and they saw that themselves. And I think that because there was this coffee and cookie time, that they were able to talk to other women, but also it made it feel much less clinical, much more like sitting in someone's home and
at a living room kind of setting and relaxing people.
Yeah, they were in couches and chairs and, you know, a circle, but with an activity to keep them busy, you know, the preparation of coffee and all of the small talk that goes around standing in line, getting the food and, you know. The second one was that it really was a safe place. So it was a space that provided acceptance. Many of them commented on the fact that because there were no men there, they didn't feel that their gambling was competitive. There were no comments about how their gambling in bingo or in lottery cards was seen as less strategic. Therefore,
they were mentioning of being put down in these groups where it's supposed to be a self-help group. That's really interesting. Dr. Rugel, do you find that, have you heard of that issue, that people are going to a group but then they're being put down by the other person in the group, like, I'm better than you, I'm a better gambler, even though I have an addiction? I mean, do you find that, Dr.?
There's absolutely, you know, a hierarchy, you know, stock market gamblers, poker gamblers who look down on lottery players and, you know, the less strategic forms of gambling, even among the men. So a woman coming in and feeling very self-conscious in a group of men, and to hear anything like, well, that's not really gambling, that's just bingo, that's just lottery, that was very discouraging.
Now, in terms of these
I was going to say, I concur with that, and as well as financial. So if there are men playing very strategic games who are winning, let's say, $100,000, and that in itself is almost something that they can brag about within a therapeutic session, versus a female who has lost $200, but in, you know, for the equivalency of the impact that it has on their finances, it may be very similar, but it sounds very different.
Do either of you find, in terms of who is more susceptible to becoming a gambler? I mean, we mentioned about the family connection, historical, but in terms of, say, age range or ethnicity, What do you find, Dr. Piquette-Tomei? Have you found any connection with in terms of different ethnicities, African American or Latino or French or German, or what have you found?
Mm-hmm. Well, interestingly enough, I have just started a research project on that, looking at that trajectory of women who are leisure gamblers telescoping into being problem gamblers. The research that we know thus far is that women tend to telescope faster than men. And they tend to begin gambling at a later age, which means that they actually have more money accessible, you know, versus when they're 20 years old. As far as racial, ethnic, even geographical area, I have not found any evidence thus far that points to a particular area, but I will defer to Dr. Rugel, who may have differing information. As I say, I'm at the beginning of this particular investigation. I'm trying to look at international information, because we do know that women, once they begin gambling, have a much higher likelihood of moving into the problem gambling area. So I'll go to Dr. Rugel.
I mean, I think that there are a couple of things. Worldwide studies have shown that the most marginalized cultural groups in any society are at highest risk for developing gambling problems. It's an avenue that provides hope, you know, financially. It may be their social context if gambling is part of their culture. And what we're finding as Rachel Volberg called the feminization of gambling. So as we get more and more forms of the non-skill gambling, the electronic gambling machines in communities, in various venues,
mm-hmm.
so you don't even have to go outside your community, that minority women seem to be particularly vulnerable.
Well, what about in terms of casinos and on reservations in Native American community? Have either of you studied that area and that issue of the being right there and then people, you know, pressuring the communities to, because they get financing or funding for other things, but the casino also draws people in a negative way? How do you guys feel about that issue?
I mean, I think, you know, Native Americans in some communities are that most marginalized group, and so they're at higher risk. It's geographic, so whatever the most marginalized group is, in some areas, even if there are Native American casinos, if there are other venues for the Native American population, it's not so much a problem. But there are higher rates of problem gambling in Native Americans when the casinos are available. For anybody who's within a 50-mile radius of a casino, there's a higher rate of problem gambling. So it's proximity as well as identification. Some Native American casinos, you know, if you're an employee there, you can't gamble there. So that helps with decreasing the problem within their communities.
I want to mention that coming up March 7th through March 13th is National Gambling Awareness Week, and there's a website that you can go to learn about that and also different tools and problem gambling information. The website is npgaw.org. Again, that's npgaw.org, and again, that's March 7th through March 13th. They also have a hotline. If you're listening right now and you feel as though you're falling a little bit too into this gambling, like, you know, I think that's the issue, right? That people do gamble and they don't really have an addiction, like you said, leisurely. But what we're saying today is that women seem to fall a little faster. Is that correct, Dr. Piquet-Tomé?
And certainly if there's a feeling of a loss of control about the desire to gamble, if one continues despite some negative consequences, which typically are not quite as simple as just having financial loss. I mean, if there's some marital issues, if there's issues with your children, work issues, as well as financial issues, then certainly it would be the time to start investigating some assistance. And there are many psychologists, psychiatrists, mental health workers throughout North America that have some fairly good understanding about problem gambling. Now, in the same breath, there seems to be a need in order to educate our therapeutic community about problem gambling because it is not identical to alcohol addiction or other addictive items. And it's not necessarily something that comes out even in the intake meeting with a client who is talking about, and particularly for females, talking about depression, talking about a loss of emotional connection with her husband or her family. Many times women who are engaged in gambling activities don't recognize that it has become a problem. Therefore, they are talking about issues that surround the problem gambling without actually...
So it's not even brought up. That's not even brought up in
precisely.
The session.
Precisely.
Dr. Google,
go ahead.
No, I just wanted to bring her into the conversation in terms of we've been talking about, you know, who's susceptible and how it happens. Well, how can we solve it? How can we stop? How can we help someone who's going? Say you're a friend and you notice that someone is really getting out of control. What could you do as a friend to bring them maybe to a therapist or to Gamblers Anonymous or something of that nature? What should a friend or a spouse do?
Yeah, I think friends and families can, in a loving way, express their concern. I'm concerned about the time you're spending at the bingo hall, at casino. We love you and we miss you. We miss the times we used to spend together. And here's a number you can call to talk to somebody. One of the main obstacles for people calling a helpline is they think, oh, they're going to force me to stop. And so they don't call. And many treatment programs now work on a harm reduction model. If you're not yet ready to stop, we're not going to force you, but let's at least look at reducing the harm to you financially, emotionally, socially, in terms of your job, and see if that works. You know, if that doesn't work, then maybe we look need to look at stopping, but that's your decision, and it's a very respectful approach to folks calling in with their concerns about a problem. I think another issue for family members of gamblers, when it's the woman and the spouse is male, it's often much harder. There's often much less support than when the gambler's a male. So women are much more stigmatized in terms of this disorder still than men seem to be.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Paquette-Tomei, in your group sessions, what are some things that the women thought would be helpful for them to continue in treatment? You talked about the food and the cookies, of course, but beyond that, I mean, how do you keep people staying and continuing to come? Because it's not a problem that's going to be fixed in, you know, a week or 2 weeks or, you know, a month even. It may be a couple of months. It could be a year. How do you keep people coming to receive assistance?
It's actually a segue from what Dr. Rugel was talking about, sort of some of the barriers that are inherent in a woman even addressing the fact that she may have an issue with problem gambling. So I just want to throw out the interesting statistic as well. So for the females, as well as males who begin any type of therapy, whether it's one-on-one, whether it's group, self-help, more than two-thirds of them drop out by the second meeting. So it is really important to give them that safe environment right from the get-go to allow their voice to be heard and respected in whatever environment they are in at that point. So some of the barriers that need to be overcome in order to keep women in any kind of counseling is, first of all, some of those personal barriers that they bring in, so shame, guilt, embarrassment of the fact that they have been involved in something that has caused financial loss, as well as perhaps loss of relationships. Some of the interpersonal barriers that they have, so explaining or hiding somehow that they are going to therapy from their spouse, from their children, their parents.
So secrecy, employers. It goes back to secrecy again.
Precisely, because it really is not well supported that women can have problem gambling. Many women, you know, I call it the supermom phenomenon, that they really believe that they should be able to do mind over matter in all aspects of their life and certainly within gambling. So for them to be seeking assistance is showing that there is a crack in their veneer and they really don't want that out there. And then in smaller communities, they also have the issue of it has to be secret from employers and other people, because if they were found to be gambling, they'd be suspect of perhaps taking money from their
company,
from aging parents, etc.
Let me mention the hotline number again if people are listening. This is for the National Problem Gambling Awareness Week website. It's 1-800-522-4700. Again, that's 1-800-522-4700. And also just want to give them their website. Their website is npgaw, again, npgaw.org. So if you're listening and you think that you have a problem, or if you're listening and you're a spouse or a friend, a relative, and you see someone kind of spiraling out of control, again, I think a small amount of gambling here and there is fine. I think the doctors will agree with me, but it's the excess and continuing and then how it's affecting their life, their job, their family, themselves. What about the issue of depression? Do you find that people maybe who are depressed are drawn into this gambling addiction and then it gets worse? Dr. Rugel, what do you feel about that?
Absolutely. The data shows that folks who are suffering from depression are 2 to 3 times more likely to have a gambling problem. And a large national study showed that folks with depression and gambling sought help for their depression, and none of them sought help for their gambling. And psychiatrists, social workers, psychologists don't ask, and it's kind of a don't ask, don't tell policy. So if your therapist or treatment professional doesn't ask, people aren't necessarily going to volunteer. Or even if somebody brings up their gambling, it's often dismissed by the treatment provider because they don't realize the impact that has on the mental health condition or the depression. So it's really key for professionals to ask the right questions and know what to do when they have a person with a gambling problem.
Dr. Paquette-Tomei, I want to bring you in. How do you feel about that, and what can institutions, in terms of educational institutions, universities, do to help prepare therapists and counselors for dealing with this issue of gambling addiction?
And again, I concur with Dr. Rugel, and I was just going to say that brings up the last point of structural barriers.
So the distance and location of any type of assistance. And if we're looking at the most marginalized populations, so certainly rural areas, we have a very, very small amount of helping kinds of organizations for a variety of reasons. So what can we do at the post-secondary level? Well, we certainly can be talking about gambling much more, that addictions is not only relegated to alcohol addictions, and that there has to be a series of questions when you see presenting issues such as depression, such as marriages falling apart, et cetera, females leaving their family members in order to go to casinos, bingo halls, et cetera. What this doesn't address, though, is one of the new issues in the accessibility of gambling, online gambling activities, because really that has become so common.
Easy. I mean, I can just go sit down on my desk. I don't even have to get on my pajamas, and I could blow, you know, $1,000 in 2 seconds online. So I think that's a very serious issue. That's a whole other issue of the issue of the positives and negatives of this new media, the internet and Facebook and Twitter and MySpace, and how they can help, but also they have some negative aspects to them too, or draw people in when they're already maybe have a situation like maybe they're depressed or they're having marital problems or problems with their children and things like that, and then they're looking for an escape. They don't have to go far. They can just go to their computer, you know, and who's the wiser? And somebody may, even their spouse may not even know until it's too late, and, you know, oh, what happened to the mortgage payment? Oh, I gambled it away online, you know?
Chances are they would not say they gambled it away. There'd be another excuse. But
okay.
In the same breath, that accessibility of not even, as you put it so perfectly, you don't even have to get dressed. I mean, it's entirely safe. You're in your own home any hour of the day that you can do this, that you can gamble huge sums in the blink of an eye. Now, the flip side of that is there are many models that have been created over the last 5 to 10 years that are online in order to assist people with problem gambling. They're just difficult to find.
Yeah. I have to interrupt you because we only have about one minute left. But I do, again, want to mention that this coming week is National Gamblers Awareness Week, and that you can go to npgaw.org to get some more information. I want to thank both of you for coming on this morning, Dr. Paquette-Tomei, all the way in Alberta, Canada, and Dr. Rugo in Connecticut. Thank you so much for coming on this morning, and we'll definitely stay in touch. And please keep me informed of some new initiatives or any new projects that you're working on so that we can bring them on the show at a later date.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Bringing up a very important issue. Thank you, Joy. It was nice meeting you, Dr. Rugel. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, ladies. Have a wonderful Saturday.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I want to thank the listeners again for listening this morning. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/JoyKeys. Also, you can become a fan on Facebook of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. And if you're registered on Blog Talk Radio, you can mark the show as a favorite. Don't forget to mark the show as a favorite. Thank you so much for listening today. Next week, we're going to be talking with Taina Seeley and La Banda Rebelda. Taina is a Puerto Rican vocalist, poet, educator, and community organizer. She's from Philadelphia, and she's right now based in Albany, New York. So tune in next Saturday. We're going to be talking to her and listening to some great music. And also, we're going to be talking about women and legal issues, things they need to know, documents they need to prepare for their life. Thank you so much for joining. And again, follow on twitter.com/JoyKeys. Become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Have a wonderful Saturday, and I hope to hear from you next Saturday, 11 a.m. Eastern. Thank you so much.